Welcome to Real Estate Investing for Women. On this show, you will learn how to create wealth through real estate the blissful way. That means with very little stress and very little time. We talk about strategies, mindset, heartset, money smarts, resources, and so much more to ensure you're able to create the success you most deeply desire. Now, here's your host, Monica Sawyer.
Ladies, stay tuned for more great conversation and amazing nuggets from our guest. And for now, let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsor. Hello, ladies. Like me, Chris Larson was a professional who started investing over 2 decades ago. After managing his own portfolio of single-family rentals for more than a decade, he discovered what now he calls the holy grail of real estate, multifamily or investing in apartments. In his book, he shares his story of how he created enough passive income to walk away from his six-figure career in medical sales at the age of 38. It's a blueprint to shortcut the process that took him 15 years to figure out and has allowed him to go from not taking a day off for months to now getting to control his time and spend every possible minute being a part of his 10-year-old son's childhood. Learn how you can invest like the rich to create true freedom for yourself by getting a free copy of his book at nextlevelincome.com/bliss, where he'll send you a copy of his book for free. That's nextlevelincome.com/bliss. Ladies, before we get into the meat of this episode, let's have a quick word from our sponsor. If your idea of asset protection and tax mitigation is setting up a simple LLC and family trust structure, you could be leaving your business, real estate, and personal assets completely exposed. Imagine instead being able to take advantage of the bulletproof asset protection tools formerly reserved for the ultra wealthy. If you'd like to mitigate or eliminate your capital gains taxes while protecting your assets from predatory litigation, visit blissfulinvestor.com/trusts. That's plural. There, you will find out more in a free recording with the world's foremost expert on a new kind of trust structure you've probably never heard of. This is a true generational wealth building business and personal asset protection and tax mitigation structure dating back to the founding of our country and is still used today. Just go to blissfulinvestor.com/trusts to find out more. It's free. Today, ladies, I am so excited to bring back to the show my close friend, Gina Gaudio Grace. You met her before. She's talked about trusts in October, and I'm bringing her back today because I want to talk about trusts again, but I really want to keep a focus on taxes and how we can handle tax mitigation with trusts. I know taxes are really on many of your mind because we just finished tax season. Many of you had to write a really big check and are kind of still smarting from that, right? And so I wanted to give you an opportunity to see that there's possibilities for relief in the future. And also for those of you that didn't write a big check, better ways to make sure that you've got tax mitigation. And I'm going to let you read Gina's bio again so I can remind all of you who you are, or who she is, because many of you haven't met her. But I do want to mention that in the past we've had, I don't know if you guys remember Chris Larson, and his whole thing was about make, keep, grow, right? We make a lot of money and we grow a lot of money. And those are the two things that most of us know about, right? Make it, grow it, make it, grow it, make it. You know, get a better job, get a raise, get a side hustle, and then grow it so that you can retire or leave a legacy or all of those things. And that's what we usually use real estate for. You can use it for the make part too, but usually that's how it goes. But what we forget about is that keep part. And just because of the simple concept of compounding, that keeping part is so very, very, very important. And a lot of times we don't talk about it because it's boring, right? I actually had somebody tell me the other day, Monica, I love your shows, but even as entertaining as you are, I can't watch your tax shows. They're just too boring, right? And I'm
that's funny. Here.
I know, right? And so, yes, I know taxes can be overwhelming and it can be boring and all of those things. But if we don't have that conversation, you'll never reach the heights that you're able to reach. And I'm here really in service to you to give you guys that blissful life. And part of that is let's work less. Let's work less on the make piece. Let's work less on the grow piece. And we can do that by managing the keep piece. And so that's really what this conversation is about today. And so before we head into that, let me reintroduce Gina for those of you who have not met her before. Dr. Gina Gaudio Grace. I got it. Yay.
And it's not G video. So I don't do video for anybody other than Monica.
And I super appreciate that you do that. My YouTube and Roku ladies are going to love it. So anyway, Dr. Gina is a retired attorney and a 1991 graduate of Notre Dame Law School, where she was the lead note editor of the Notre Dame Law Review. Dr. Gina holds a PhD in entrepreneurship and business strategy, and she's a certified wealth management specialist and a licensed document preparer. Dr. Gina is also the founder of Abundance Group Trust and the co-founder of the Abundance for All Foundation. Her personal mission is to touch the life of every person on the planet in a meaningful way. Hello, my friend. Welcome back.
Hello.
To the show.
Thank you for having me.
So nice to chat with you today. So we're going to be talking about taxes. Yay.
Let's see if we can make this. We're talking about the keeping part. It's one of my favorite things, right? It's right. All about leverage.
Exactly.
Even
our favorite real estate firm.
Grow it is about leverage. But right. The keep, more than anything else, it's leverage. And decades ago, clients started calling me Leverage Gina. Uh-huh. As a disabled woman, I can't live life without leverage. And I certainly can't build businesses without leverage. Leverage is really important.
Yes.
And that's what we're going to be talking about.
How
do you work smarter, not harder?
Yeah.
How do you make more and keep more so that you can then make that much more?
Right. So leverage is one of our favorite real estate terms. So I love how you, and I know you work with a lot of real estate investors.
I do.
And, you know, I just want to emphasize that again. David and I have been able to grow our portfolio. His income, you know, he's the main breadwinner of our family. He's been a software engineer. His income has grown kind of at the rate that incomes have grown, which is significantly slower than inflation and the appreciation of a property, so housing costs. So all of those things, without the keep strategies, without the whole thing along the way, we would not have been able to grow the way that we have. And now we're fine-tuning that, right? As we're looking at retirement, this is why you and I have been having so many conversations, is now we're in the fine-tuning stage so that growth can continue to happen exponentially without us doing the make phase any further. Like, instead of trading time for money, which is what my husband does, instead of doing that, and I do it too, right? But instead of doing that, now we're transitioning into the real estate is going to make the money for us, which means we are not going to be spending that much time with it. We're going to be keeping more, which allows real estate's going to grow anyways, right? It's a beautiful hedge against inflation, but also anything that comes in now is going to grow exponentially faster because we're keeping more. Does that make sense?
Sure does.
Okay.
Sure does.
So tell us a little bit more. Why don't you explain sort of how this all works?
So trusts can be so powerful. As we talked about on the last show, we're not talking about that living trust that you get for a lawyer for $3,000. That'll help you avoid probate and probate taxes, but that's about all it's going to do. It's a very different kind of trust. And even in law school, we didn't learn about this kind of trust. We learned about living trusts mainly, but trusts, if you go out and start Googling trusts, there are so many different kinds of trusts, it'll make your head spin.
Mm-hmm.
And because there are so many more, understanding how different kinds of trusts can be grouped together to get that much more leverage from them, that's really what I've done, is I've figured out how do you combine different trust structures to get exponentially more leverage. With the trust structure that we recommend and use, and both Monique and I have this for our lives and our businesses,
yep,
it allows you to completely and totally eliminate capital gains taxes legally. And it also allows you to get up to 100% deferral of taxes on any kind of passive income. So passive income comes from rent and lease income. If you're a coach, speaker, author, or infopreneur, all of that is considered passive income. It's income from intellectual property, which the IRS says is passive. So if you didn't have to pay capital gains taxes ever, and you could defer taxes on passive income in perpetuity, which means many generations from now, when everybody's gone, is when the tax man gets paid. How much more would you be able to make and grow because you're not sending 40% to Uncle Sam or more?
So ladies, I want you to really think about that. She actually has a workflow report that she wrote. It's a white paper that kind of describes the differences between when you pay all of these taxes and when you don't, and instead you can invest them or help them to compound and appreciate, right? What the numbers really work out to be. So if you ladies want that, you can go to blissfulinvestor.com/ what did we decide?
Money flow.
That's right. Okay. So blissfulinvestor.com/money flow. And then that way you can get that report downloaded and you can kind of take a look at the way the numbers work. However, you ladies know the basic concept of compounding. The sooner the money goes into your resources to be investor or grown, the longer it has to grow, and therefore the faster your wealth grows, right? It's a very simple concept that all of us really have heard a lot about. Many of us understand it, some of us don't, right? But that just the basic idea of compounding. Now, because of the way that we structure things with Gina, it's much faster than that. But just that simple idea of make sure the money stays with you and goes into investments sooner rather than later, because time is gold when it comes to investing, right?
Boy, is it ever.
Yeah. So go ahead, Gina. I'm going to let you kind of.
So you're going to, when you read this article that Monique, the case study is really what it is, that just gave you the link, blissfulinvestor.com/money flow. It's a case study of an actual client who has a dental practice. Before we set up our trust for him, he was spending over $320,000 a year in taxes. Now, that was from a combination of his dental practice as well as his real estate investments. Once we set the trusts up and we're using a two-trust structure for this client, what we call a personal trust that holds the majority of the assets, and then a business trust as well. The business trust is running his dental practice. It's handling his short-term rentals, things like that. But once everything was set up for him and he could operate completely out of these two trusts, he's now only paying around $100,000 a year in taxes instead of $320,000 a year in taxes. If we had set up a third trust, which is a charitable trust structured as a private family foundation, we could literally get him down to a $0 tax liability. So making around $656,000 a year is great, but boy, if you're spending $320,000 of that every year in taxes, and now you get $320,000 more to invest, holy cow, what would that do for you 10 years from now or even 5 years from now, right?
Right.
Even if we're talking about a moderate return, even on a moderate return, you're going to expect at least 12 to 14% per year, wouldn't you?
Mm-hmm.
So let's just say at 12%, that $320,000 a year is going to add an extra $38,400 a year to your income or to what you've got.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine instead of $320,000, now next year it's going to be at $358,000 because of that extra piece. And if we take the 358 and we do exactly the same thing at 12% again, What are we doing there? We're going to do about $39,000 the next year in growth. So that compounding effect, I know I've experienced it personally. I had invested $100,000 a year, a little over a year ago now, and I'm watching it grow, and it's growing well, but not quite as well as I had hoped. But boy, when I got that 100,000 turned into 1 million, and that 1 million started growing, to get it to 2 million, it took about a quarter of the time it took to get from 100,000 to 1 million because of what happens with compounding. The more you have, the more you make.
Right.
And if the trust is making it, it's making it all either tax-free because there's no capital gains taxes, or tax-deferred if it's passive income. Let me tell you, it compounds way, way faster.
Yeah. So let's talk specifically about the structure and what people would be doing. How does this whole thing work, right?
So you're going to make a list of all of your assets and any liabilities attached to them. So a liability would be a mortgage or a note on a car, things like that. And then we're going to help you take all those assets and liabilities and convey them to your trust in an actual sale. Now, if you've got a house that you paid $200,000 for that you've owned for a number of years and it's now worth 1 million, don't worry. You're selling that house to the trust at $200,000, so there's no taxable gain for that tax year. You're not selling it at the million, but literally you convey every asset to the trust. Now, the trust owns everything. The trust is then able to take care of any expense associated with any asset it owns, whether that's your mortgage payment, a new roof on your home, new tires on your car if it owns the car. All of those expenses now belong to the trust. Ideally, you're not just putting the assets that are just sitting there, the things that you use, but you're putting assets in that appreciate and grow. That's where the trust is really helpful, because any income that comes into the trust first gets used to take care of any valid trust expenses. So all those things related to your home, your car, and other things like your medical expenses can be paid for by the trust. Your life insurance can be paid for by the trust. There are only three things that the trust cannot pay for. They are food, fun, and fashion. Those three things you have to use personal monies to pay for. But everything else, the trust takes care of. And if you've got children under 21, even their food and clothing gets taken care of by the trust. So if the trust has income, that income gets used to pay all the bills. Whatever's left over, so long as it came from either capital gains or passive income, the trustee declares it as what's called an extraordinary dividend. All that means is it's getting added to the corpus of the trust. The word corpus means body in the Latin phrase. So it's monies from income that got kept in the name of the trust, whether it's in an investment, whether it's buying a piece of real estate, whether it's in the trust bank account, all of those are corpus. Anything added to corpus from passive income or capital gains income at the bottom of the tax return where it says how much you pay in taxes will say zero.
Did you ladies hear that? It says zero.
And it is legal.
Yeah, that, you know what? And that, I have to confess, that's the thing. I don't want to be thrown in jail, Gina, because I
neither
like
do
a,
I.
A fraud, you know, tax fraud. You hear all these stories.
Yes.
It is all legal, correct? Let's emphasize that.
Oh my gosh, is it ever? In fact, I should know this off the top of my head, but I'm going to go look it up. There is a little thing called Circular 230. Circular 230 is a very powerful thing. It is the rules for anyone who's a member of the tax bar. Now, I'm not a member of the tax bar, but we have a number of attorneys that work with us that are. And when someone's a member of the tax bar, they are allowed to write what is known as an opinion letter. Circular 230 tells them that they're allowed to do that. If you, as a taxpayer, rely on a written opinion letter that follows a very prescribed format, then if later on the IRS should audit the trust and say, doesn't really work that way, Monica, and they want to assess back taxes plus interest, they are not allowed to issue penalties. And the attorneys that work with our clients, all of them are required to have at least $1 million of errors and omissions insurance, which is really important because of the fact that as long as they've got that $1 million in coverage, you're able to go against the E&O policy should the IRS ever assess back taxes plus interest. So in my opinion, the only way to get into this trust thing is to plan on getting an opinion letter from someone who is a member of the tax bar right in the Internal Revenue Code. And I was trying to look up the section number, but of course, I'm not putting my finger on it very quickly.
What if that let's say, for instance, you go through an audit and then that person that gave you the opinion letter has either retired or has been debarred?
Disbarred, you mean?
Disbarred, yeah. That word so, is.
The likelihood that that would happen is extremely slim. Mm-hmm. But if they are disbarred and that were to occur, the IRS still is not allowed to issue penalties. And it's straight out of the Internal Revenue Code. I wish I had the section. I wanted to actually read you what it says in the Internal Revenue Code. Gosh darn it, where the heck did it go? I'm just going to have to do it from memory. It's basically going to say something to the effect of, you are an innocent taxpayer because you had justification to rely on the opinion of someone. And it says it right in the Internal Revenue Code. In that case, they cannot issue penalties, and they can't issue either civil penalties or criminal penalties. So don't worry, you and I don't have to worry about looking awful in orange, so long as we get a written opinion letter. And so long as the opinion letter follows the prescribed format.
Okay. All right. Interesting. Because my husband was like, we don't want tax fraud. Well, of course we don't want tax fraud.
Absolutely. That's the whole point, right?
Yeah. Awesome. Interesting.
Yeah, this stuff is straight out of the Internal Revenue Code, guys.
Okay.
Straight out of it.
Great. So what I'd like us to do, we did this in the first call, but I'd like to do kind of a compressed version of really what keeps it legal, right? Like you were saying, there are two different kinds of trusts that are written. There's contractual and there's statutory. Right. That's right. So let's talk, because one of the questions that comes up for me is when we're talking about tax law, everything is based on code, right? We want to make sure everything is legal. So
not everything in tax law is based on the Internal Revenue Code.
Okay, good. So clarify.
This type of trust is called a complex trust. And mm-hmm. it's not because it's complicated. Mm-hmm. It's one of two types of trusts. Mm-hmm. A simple trust is a trust that must distribute 100% of its income at least annually to its beneficiaries. That is not this kind of trust. A complex trust is anything that is not a simple trust. That's the legal definition of it. So if you have a trust that is allowed to retain earnings the way that a corporation could retain earnings, that's a complex trust. It has its own tax ID number. It is completely separate as a taxpayer. Now, it files a tax return. As individuals, we file on a 1040 return form. The trust is going to file on a 1041 return, specifically for complex trusts. Right in the tax form itself, the 1041, on page 2, there's 3 sections. The second section talks about deductions from income. And on line 8 of that section, it's section B, it asks for the taxpayer to insert accounting income as calculated based on the trust instrument and local law. So what the heck does that mean? What it means is local law is referring to something called the Uniform Principal and Income Act. It governs fiduciary accounting, which is the kind of accounting that a trust does. It's fiduciary accounting as opposed to GAAP accounting or some other type of accounting. But when you do accounting that way, that Uniform Principal and Income Act trumps the Internal Revenue Code when it comes to how things are taxed. And what that line 8 is saying is the trust instrument itself even trumps the Uniform Principle and Income Act. So technically, could you write a trust that says you have no taxes ever? Yeah, you probably could. I've never figured out how to do that. I don't want to do that. I want to work within the framework that the IRS has created. Even in a handbook that the IRS has created for auditors in the estate division, that's who would be auditing a trust, there's a whole page devoted to saying something to, akin to, in almost every case, taxes are governed by the Internal Revenue Code and tax regulations, but there is an exception. And that one exception is when it comes to complex trusts. And again, complex trusts for tax purposes are governed first and foremost by the trust instrument, secondarily by the Uniform Principal and Income Act, and third, whatever the IRC says, the Internal Revenue Code, but it's in third place. The other two trump it all the time. Now, there are two kinds of trusts. There are statutory trusts like a living trust. It's a statutory trust. Every single state has a statute that says you can have a living trust. But from one state to the next, the rules, what that trust needs to look like, are going to be different. Then there are contractual trusts. Anybody can say, I'm setting this thing aside in trust for my heirs when I die. That's a trust. It's not written down, but it's a trust. So it has to follow the rules of contract law and nothing but the rules of contract law. It's a contract, just like any other contract between any other people. So because it is a contract and it's governed by things like the Uniform Commercial Code, with our trust, I decided to take that to another level. When I started looking at this thing called the Uniform Principal and Income Act that governs fiduciary accounting principles, I'm so sorry about Popeye. I don't know what he wants or I would get it. When I started looking at the UPIA, most states have adopted it. But from one state to the next, they have butchered it badly and made modifications. UPIA, Uniform Principal and Income Act.
Thank you.
UPIA for short. In many states, they have made so many modifications to it that it doesn't even look like what the actual Uniform Act looks like. So it made me start thinking, how can I get the actual Uniform Act to apply to every client's trust? And it was easier than I thought it was going to be when I started checking into it. It turns out that if the situs of the trust, because a trust has to have a situs, if the situs is these United States of America, the geographic region, and not the state, that not the country or the corporation, it's a common law trust.
Repeat that again.
The situs of the trust
What does situs mean?
Situs means the location.
Location.
The body of law that's going to apply to this trust.
Got it. Okay.
In a statutory trust, it's going to have a situs in the state whose laws it follows.
Mm-hmm.
But in a contractual trust, just like in any other contract, you often see a clause that says this contract is governed by the laws of fill in the blank with the state, right? Well, common law is created when you say that the trust's situs is these United States of America, all lowercase characters, the geographic region, and not either the country or corporation, which makes it common law contract. So I was a little bit concerned about whether a court might not honor that. And in reading the Uniform Trust Code, which has also been adopted in this case in every state, it actually allows to have two different choices of law. You have the situs, which is the location of the trust, which is what laws govern the trust. But there's a clause in it called governing law that also states, if any judge should ever refuse to honor this as a common law contract, the choice of law should apply South Dakota law. And we did that because South Dakota's laws related to trusts are extremely favorable. They've been around a very long time. They've been put through plenty of cases to come out with a great body of work that can help to really give meaning to the trust in the event a judge doesn't want to honor common law. So that's how we set it up. It's a common law contractual trust that has the trust instrument and the Uniform Principal and Income Act governing it. Now, because of the CITES being these United States of America, the version of the Uniform Principal and Income Act that applies isn't any state's version of it. It's the actual Uniform Act. So for tax purposes, that's a really good thing.
It protects us because it's more of a universal. Is
correct.
That true?
Okay. Exactly right.
Okay. So have you had any of your clients have to go through any kind of audit yet?
Yes, I actually have.
Could you talk about that?
One client, and only one client, estate division trusts or tax returns don't get audited very frequently. In fact, it's the least most often type of return, 1041s. But nonetheless, we had a very weird set of circumstances. A client's personal return was audited for one tax year. It came back no change. She hadn't set up her trust yet. A week later, she gets audited on the next tax year. Again, she hadn't set up her trust yet. Again, it came back no change. Well, this auditor is getting mad that he can't find anything to say about her returns. So he moves to the third tax year. Well, the third tax year, on January 2nd of that year, she set up her trust. So he audits that personal tax return, gets the return, and then says, wait a minute, how did your income decrease so much and you didn't have a change in living situation at all? And she proudly explained that she had set up a trust for estate planning purposes, and it was only a couple of days before they audited the trust for the first year of the trust. I oversaw that, worked with the CPA that was representing her in front of the auditor, and I am very happy to say that both the third year of personal returns as well as the first year of trust tax returns both came back no change. And finally, the auditors left them alone. So that happened a little over almost a year ago. June of last year is when it finished.
The trust, if it were to get audited or anything like that, do we need your help? Can a regular CPA, whoever we're using, can they handle it? Are there any specifications around that?
If your CPA is intimately familiar with complex trusts, then by all means, you can use whoever you've been using. And in fact, that was the case with this particular client. Mm-hmm. She used the guy that's done her tax work for 20 years, mm-hmm. but he had a lot of knowledge about complex trusts. Mm-hmm. You will absolutely have someone on my team, whether me or someone else on the team, overseeing whoever's representing you in an audit. Mm-hmm. If you go the route of the opinion letter, you're also going to have the tax attorney that wrote the opinion letter overseeing things, which is even better. Mm-hmm. But we do include on the first year of the trust, we include the tax returns that will be done by a CPA or an enrolled agent. And by all means, contact them immediately if that return gets audited. They have a vested interest in making sure that that audit is going to come out good. Mm-hmm. So you'll have plenty of help.
Okay, got it. Awesome. Is there anything else you wanted to share sort of about tax mitigation specifically around this trust?
So quite often I talk to people who will end our consult by saying, oh, I love everything I hear, but I'm not big enough yet to be ready for this trust. And I kind of laugh because the trust has several benefits. The tax mitigation piece is the one we're talking about today, and it's a biggie. It's what's going to give you a return on your investment, but it's one of exactly. It's one of many benefits. There's asset protection benefits. If you drive a car, you need asset protection. And trust me when I say, setting up an LLC to run your real estate through is not a solid asset protection strategy. First time I was able to penetrate an LLC and get the assets within it and go after the owner's personal assets, I was only a third-year law student when I did that for the first time. It is not hard to do at all. So don't rely on your LLC for asset protection. This trust gives you ironclad asset protection. If you drive a car, you have risk. someone that you hit unintentionally, but nonetheless, it was your fault, could come after you for everything. Your house, your cars, your bank accounts, your brokerage accounts, any of the real estate that you own. You do not want to be in that position. So when are you ready for a trust? As soon as you buy your first car, have the car owned by the trust. Have everything else owned by the trust. And get yourself this ironclad asset protection. Because of the unique structure of this trust, a creditor cannot, or someone who's a judgment creditor, cannot reach the assets held within the trust other than in one instance. If you knew that a car accident had taken place, you hadn't been sued yet, but you were still wondering, they might sue you, but I got to get asset protection. So now you set up your trust and put all your assets in it. That's called a fraudulent conveyance because you knew the cause of action had occurred. If you wait until that point to set a trust up, nothing is going to be done to help you. They're going to be able to unravel the trust and get to anything and everything that's in it. So if you're thinking about real estate investing, you just haven't started yet, now is the time to set up your trust for asset protection purposes, if nothing else. And I promise you, working with my team, we're going to find ways to help mitigate your taxes. If you don't have any passive income or capital gains income yet, there are so many different things we can still do. It's going to vary from one person to the next, but there's still so many things we can do to help mitigate your tax liability, give you that ironclad asset protection, and help you grow and through what you keep. It'll compound that much faster.
I love that. If you don't have passive income yet or active, what do you say, from your real estate, right? I'm blanking on the different kinds of income, but anyway.
There's active income, passive income, and capital gains. Those are the three.
Right. So if we have capital gains, don't have capital gains income or passive income, which are where we get relieved of our tax liability, what are some of the other strategies? You said it's per person, but could you give us some examples?
Sure. So let's say you have W-2 income.
Yep.
I have a client who's a pediatric oncologist. He is paid directly by the hospital, not a practice. He gets $1.2 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of W-2 income.
Mm-hmm.
That poor guy. So we were able to have him go into the hospital.
I just have to interrupt and say, that poor guy. Wouldn't we all want to be that poor?
Yes, but $1.2 million a year.
Yeah.
He keeps less than $600,000 of it before he talked to Dr. Gina.
Yeah.
It's painful.
Yes.
So that poor guy, that is to work as much as he does and as hard as he does and take the risk that he does. That's just awful. Uncle Sam wasn't right next to him helping him do all of that for the $600,000 that he got, you know?
Right.
So I had him go to the hospital and ask the hospital if they would be willing to pay him on a 1099. And they said, we can do that if you have a PLLC, which is a professional limited liability company. So we set him up with a PLLC. And guess what? With a PLLC, the trust can become a 90% limited partner of it.
Mm.
He's the manager of it. So 90% of his $1.2 million now belongs to the trust. And it's 100% tax deferred in perpetuity. He went from having to spend $600,000 a year on his tax liability to paying out about $120,000 a year in his tax liability. How much more will he grow because he's got an extra $580,000 a year or $480,000 a year to invest?
So in that case, what happens with malpractice and all of that? Like, how does that work?
All handled by the hospital and his PLLC.
Okay.
Hospital's been paying the premiums. He's not had to pay any premiums out of pocket from it.
Got it. So that's someone who can do that. My husband, you and I have had this conversation. And so my husband, he works for a, you know, tech company. They said, no way. Well, actually, what they said, let me tell you really quickly. And I want to hear what you had to say. They would do it, but he loses all of his benefits. And we have a six-figure benefit package. Does that make sense?
Yes. Does his W-2 also show a portion of the benefit package that you're then taxed on.
No, it does not. Well, no, I mean, it's the regular, right? We've got our medical, we have matching in our 401k, so there's no taxes.
If there's
on that.
Benefits of more than $100,000, it is treated as imputed income. And you're supposed to be taxed on it, just so you know.
Well, this is going to be our first year, so let's see what happens.
It'll be interesting. Yeah. Yes. So, what can we do with poor David?
Mm-hmm. My poor David, yes.
Yeah. So, the one thing we can do is to use our third trust structure, which means a charitable trust set up as a private family foundation.
Mm-hmm.
When we obtain the tax ID number, obtained as a 501c3.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a legitimate charity. You can donate up to 30% of your adjusted gross income to this type of nonprofit. And it is a dollar for dollar reduction of adjusted gross income.
Mm.
Now, let's just use $300,000. If he made $300,000 in W-2 income, he could have up to $90,000 donated to his nonprofit each year.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's only going to get taxed on $210,000 instead of $300,000.
Okay.
That's a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
At $300,000, he's probably paying around $120,000 or a little more every year in taxes. At $200,000, he's only going to be paying $80,000 a year in taxes. That's an extra $40,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, put that to work for you in your personal trust and grow it, tax deferred in perpetuity.
Mm-hmm.
But what do we do with the $90,000 he put into the foundation?
Exactly.
This type of foundation is an amazing thing. It is legally allowed to provide fringe benefits for the trustees and their families. So it could pay for things like life insurance, even medical insurance. You can go on a family retreat up to once a quarter. It's a vacation to solidify the family unit. Monica, you at least go on vacation once a quarter, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Could use that $90,000 for that. I don't know if that's going to be enough for you, but nonetheless, in between those family retreats, you can go on an unlimited number of what are called site visits. So say Monica comes and visits Dr. Gina in Fort Myers, Florida. While she's here, she looks around for good work that her foundation can do. That's a site visit. So don't think that money going into your foundation is going into a black hole, never to be used or touched. There are plenty of ways to make use of it.
Mm-hmm.
And for those of you that have businesses, that foundation is huge in terms of what it can do for you. A legitimate nonprofit can get up to $10,000 per month in advertising credit from Google. That's $120,000 a year. When I talk to some of my clients, people like Jay Connor, for example, Jay has a fairly sizable advertising budget. If he got an extra $120,000 a year in advertising, he wouldn't be able to handle the volume of business it would bring him. That's huge. And that's just one thing you can do because of the foundation. And that foundation doesn't have to use the advertising just to advertise the foundation. If you were to use it, you can have that advertising advertise Blissful Investor, as long as whatever you make from that advertising, you have a little baby piece that you pay back to the foundation as a donation. Totally legitimate use of the advertising dollars. So there's so many things you can do with the money in that foundation, in addition to doing good in the world. And if you need more than a 30% reduction in adjusted gross income, then we set up a second foundation that's a public charity. I have both a private family foundation and a public charity. Why would I do that? Well, in my private foundation, I cannot get donations for more than 40% of whatever donations it receives each year. So I would have had to have matched it plus some. And after Hurricane Ian last September, I wanted to raise a bunch of money to do a lot of good in and around my local community. So I couldn't do it out of my foundation that I had. So I set up the second foundation as a public charity. No restrictions on that. when I'm giving, which I did, I gave $250,000 to help the relief efforts that we did. I donate that money to my private family foundation. My private family foundation gives a grant to my public charity. Easy. And my public charity then goes out and raises all this other money. So you can't get the fringe benefits out of the public charity, which is why you want both. The private family foundation is there for you to give donations to, whether from your trust or you, but your personal ones are going to be limited to that 30% of adjusted gross income. Your trusts can donate up to 100% of their income to the foundation if you choose to.
Oh,
but if you're that doctor with the $1.2 million W-2 income, and 30% is going to help, but not enough, and you add the public charity, you can also personally give another 30% of the adjusted gross income to the public charity. So at that $300,000 example, $90,000 could go to the private family foundation, now gets you down to $210,000, and another $90,000 can go to the public charity, getting your taxable income down to $120,000 instead of $300,000. That's enough to not only reduce the dollars that are getting taxed, it reduces your tax bracket big time.
Mm-hmm. But you can't, if it goes into the public charity trust, you can't personally utilize that money.
No, you cannot.
Right. That actually goes to a charity.
Mm-hmm.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the public charities are considered operating associations. So they're the boots on the ground doing good work kinds of people.
Got it.
They can make grants, but that's not what their intention is from the start. The mm-hmm. private family foundation is a grant-making organization only, but mm-hmm. both can also receive grants. And in fact, with my public charity, within a couple of weeks, I got $9.2 million in grants,
wow.
which was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I've been able to do so much good in my local community.
When you have the private family foundation, do you have to, is there a certain percentage that you have to give back from that? You know, so you can pay for the trustees, but you must have to actually go out and do some work. I mean, we do anyway.
That's how the Internal Revenue Code is written.
Okay.
It must spend at least 5% of the assets under management or the endowment. So whatever it has, it must spend at least 5% of it per year. But guess what? The costs of the foundation are also included in that spend. Mm-hmm. So all those fringe benefits, what you spend on them counts towards the 5%. Mm-hmm. Now, if from 1 year to the next and on, the only things that were being reported on the tax return were things that were fringe benefits, the IRS is probably not going to like that too much. So I would make sure that each year you're doing some good work and giving some grants, do something.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's just you're giving money to your local church, mm-hmm. that's enough to make it legitimate. And then you get these other huge benefits from it. So there are many ways that we can help mitigate. And my whole point in even starting that conversation was it's never too soon. Don't think that you're not yet big enough. If you're even contemplating real estate investing, now is the time to get this foundational stuff set up.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to help you get into the investing part of real estate so much faster with the things that we're doing to help mitigate your tax liability.
Mm, I love that. Yeah, we are always looking for ways, well, for me and my own household, we're looking for ways to have a little bit more and not a little bit more to spend on us, right?
Right.
Our lifestyle is not growing, but we want that extra money so that we can then invest it somewhere or donate it somewhere.
Leverage it.
Yeah, leverage it in one way or the other.
Because even donating it is leveraging it, in my opinion.
Right. Yeah.
As you said at the beginning of the show, my mission is to touch the life of every person on the planet in a meaningful way. And it's not something I can do on my own, but working with people like you who are setting up foundations, who are out doing good work in the world, together we can touch every life on this planet. No problem. I am mm-hmm. certain of it. And I realized last year, we've helped so many people start foundations now. It's not even about touching the life of every person alive today. it's touching the life of people who aren't even born yet, mm-hmm. and all of them in a meaningful way. That's what my mission is.
Yeah.
So I'm so thrilled that you and your clients and all of our listeners here today are likely to be a part of my mission.
And so, ladies, I hope that you have a little bit more clarity on how this structure can benefit you and your business and your family and the stuff that you want to do in the world and all of those wonderful things. And so if you want more information, so there's a few things that I'd like to share with you. Gina and I did another podcast where she did a lot more in-depth explanation on the details of the trust. So if you want to know that, just go to my website, blissfulinvestor.com, and do a search for Gina. You could just put it in Gina.
And it's G-I-N-A.
G-I-N-A, exactly. Put her in and you'll be able to find that old episode. You can listen to that. The other thing is we did a webinar and it was about an hour and a half webinar, lots of really, really good questions. And that is also up for you to take a look at. And you just have to go to blissfulinvestor.com/trusts. Sorry, it's plural, trusts, T-R-U-S-T-S. When you go on there, you're going to have an opportunity to see that webinar. It's in two parts. You're also going to get to see the webinar and podcast that Gina originally sent to me to let me know sort of what is going on and got me really interested in this conversation. It is very, very good. And it comes from the perspective of someone who had made a lot of money in stock. So it's a little bit different conversation. So it gives you a bigger perspective on what's possible, the legalities of everything. Because I know a lot of us, we hear so much about taxes and all our obligations and the possibilities if we don't fulfill those obligations. And I have to admit, it's even scary for me. So, but that really rested. And I know Gina would never do anything to get me in trouble. We're close personal friends. But for me, I need to do my research too, right? Due diligence
Absolutely.
Is very important. So you're going to get access to that too. So there's 4 hours of information. And then after that, or before that, depending on where you're at, you can reach out to Gina. And so Gina, why don't you explain how this kind of works for you if they reach out to you? And
sure.
Go ahead.
So after you get to the interview that I did and the webinar Monica told you about, the bottom of the page, there's a button where you can set up a time to talk. And basically we get together on a consult. I'm not here to sell anybody anything. It's truly a consult. I need to know more about how you make your money so that I can then help guide you. I call it I serve and strategically monetize. But I'm really here first and foremost to serve. And I'm going to bring my leveragina hat that day so that I can look at ways that you can get more leverage so you can really make, keep, and grow the way that we're all intended to. If at the end of that conversation, it looks like the trusts really are a good fit for you, we're then going to send you a written proposal. It's going to outline all of the details for you. It'll show you everything that's included in deliverables. It'll show you what the pricing looks like. And if you talk about it with your spouse or you decide on your own that, yes, you really want to move forward, you just sign that and send it back to us and we move right along.
Okay,
but
good.
There is a time element to this. And the time element is this. On July 23rd through July 26th, we are doing our first annual Wealth Building Mastermind and Networking event. And to say I'm excited about it is kind of an understatement for so many reasons. One of the biggest is I've never met my clients in person. I've never even met Monica in person.
And I'm going to be here.
I can't wait to go and get hugs from you especially and all of my other clients. So don't sit there and wait, guys. Go through the material. Go get on the consult schedule. And come join us in July. It's open to clients only. So that means you're moving forward as a client. But those tickets are sold for $2,000 if you're not a newer client. So go do it.
Yeah. Well, and you know, the thing is that, so we're just finishing taxes for this year, for this last year. And then every year taxes keep going.
Yes,
and
so they do.
It's better to get this all prepared so that you're not scrambling with all the other stress that taxes can cause for us. you don't want to be scrambling at the very end with your tax planning.
And I know, Monica, it's worse than that.
Tell me.
Until your trust tax ID number is set up and we get a couple basic things done, your income is still outside of the trust.
Mm-hmm.
So if you waited until December to set this up, you're not going to be able to take the income from January until December and have it be in the trust and therefore tax deferred. So every day that you wait, you're paying more taxes.
I didn't realize that, because there is a lot of stuff that you can do at the very end and then it's retroactive, right?
The only thing you can really use for that is you can use the foundations, like mm-hmm. we talked about, to reduce it by 30%, but that's it. The trusts you can't do retroactively.
Mm-hmm.
So
interesting. I didn't realize that. Ladies, I know this sounds complicated.
It's not. I promise you it's not.
Yeah, but I just want to remind you, ladies, do you remember I talk about this conversation I had with my dad when I was a very young woman debating whether to get into real estate? And my dad said to me, you know, Monica, everybody has stress, everybody has fear, and everybody has money problems. You want poor people money problems, or do you want rich people money problems? And what do you think I chose, right? And what are you going to choose? Because that's kind of, I don't want to say that this trust is a money problem, but you know, this poor guy making $1.2 million, that's a money problem.
That is definitely a money problem.
And rich people money problems are significantly better than the alternative.
Oh boy, are they ever. Oh boy. So, and I had the complete opposite of Monica. When I was younger, my dad was president of North American operations for Oman Electronics, which is a huge Japanese electronics company. He was making big bucks, but he lost his job in 1989. And after that, he's tried a couple of different ways of doing startups. He got into day trading for a while. I was doing day trading and teaching day trading very successfully. Dad lost his whole retirement.
Mm.
So my dad is now 82 years old. He worked full time until he was 79 and physically couldn't do it anymore. I never, ever had conversations with my dad about rich people money problems or poor people money problems. And I so wish I had. So your dad, I love him. That was awesome.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
What a gift, right?
What a gift. So yeah. If you didn't get that in your early years, like I didn't, please listen to what Monica is saying today.
Yeah.
Because it's very true. I've been on both sides and it's a very different money problem.
And it changes your mindset because my original thought around that was, what? Rich people have money problems? And there are a lot of people that will say, I don't want rich people money problems. I hear this all the time too. So what do you want? You're going to be dealing with money in life. It's a reality of life, right? How are you going to be dealing with it? And for me, I wanted my life to be blissful. I wanted it to be with ease and flow. I work very, very hard. I have worked very hard for my money in the past too. But everything that I do is to support my bliss. And part of what makes it a reality is having rich people money problems, right? So
a trust
allows me to do that better. So even though in the beginning, there's a lot of stuff to learn and it feels a little bit complicated, I will admit I'm in the learning phase. It does continue to feel complicated, but I'm getting there. I can see progress. And progress is, for me, that's the big thing. As I see progress, I see movement, I see benefits, that learning curve continues to be okay with me. There is a learning curve also on how am I going to get out of credit card debt because I don't make enough. There's a learning curve on my credit just got shot because I couldn't make my house payment or my car payment. You know, there's going to be a learning curve on one side or the other, whether you've got not enough money or you've got too much money. So you want to set yourself up for the better money problems. So if you've got them, there's obvious reasons. If you don't have them yet, get yourself set up, man, so that the learning curve, you got more time for it. You can relax into it and you can grow in that way, which will help you to grow a lot faster. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Sure does.
Yay.
And don't worry. We will hold your hand every single step of the way. Abundance Group Trust is not just Dr. Gina. There's a whole team supporting all of our clients. So we are here for you. And whether you like it or not, We're here for you. We do calls right now 4 days a week, usually 3 days a week. The extra day is a new training I'm putting out. It finishes up next week. But I always will do 3 calls a week. They're Q&A calls, and they're meant for people to come in and get the help they need to implement and operate out of their trusts.
And they're all recorded. So if
and
you're
they're
like
all
me,
recorded in podcasts.
Exactly. So you can get access to them. So you've got this huge wealth of information that you can just listen to and listen to and listen to until you're able to repeat all the information right in your own brain. So it's
absolutely
really good.
And you get it in audio, video, and text format. We don't just give it to you one way. So whichever way helps you the best, it's there for you.
Perfect. I love that. Did you want to say anything before we close, Gina?
No, I can't wait to meet your people. I really, in person in July even.
Yeah.
So come get on my calendar. Make sure that I know you came from Monica so I can say, oh my goodness, and tell her thank you.
Yeah, that's perfect.
And we hope to see you in July. In fact, we'll even do this, Monica. I have some room for breakout sessions.
Mm-hmm.
We can even do a breakout session with your ladies.
Oh my God,
at the event,
that.
Since we're both going to be here.
Yeah.
Might as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, and ladies, you know I'm not traveling a lot anymore. I've made some, I'm traveling a lot for fun. I am not leaving David behind anymore. And so I'm not traveling a lot for business stuff because he's not going to take time off of his job to come do my business travel. But I am going to be there with Gina in July. So that'd be a really fun time to meet.
That really would.
And really put our heads together on how we can utilize the trust to benefit the growth of our lives, you know? So.
Absolutely. Oh, amazing. That'll be fun.
Yeah.
I'm going to be in that breakout session.
I'm with you. Yay! I'm so excited.
Me too.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Monica. And just to remind everyone, it's blissfulinvestor.com/trusts, plural.
Exactly.
You're going to have a blast.
Yes. And it will be in the show notes, the website, blissfulinvestor.com. So, ladies, thank you so much for joining in with this conversation and hanging in there. I love hanging out with you and I appreciate you so much. And I'll see you next time. And until then, remember, goals without action are just dreams. So, get out there, take action, and create the life your heart deeply desires. I'll see you soon.
I hope you enjoyed today's show. If you'd like to find out more about how to become a blissful millionaire, go to blissfulinvestor.com. See you next time.